Well,
Blog
hello there.
Talk Radio.
I don't know nothing about that. All I know is that somebody is going to get the ass whooped over this thing.
Well, hello there. Glad you could make it. I'm Troy McClure, and you may remember me from such educational films as Herpes, The Gift That Keeps on Giving. Want to change your life? Well, now you can, with the power of Kabbalah One. Power of Kabbalah, P-O-K, parentheses, One, is a paradigm-shifting course that reveals the secrets to all Kabbalistic teachings, the golden rules you can master if you seek more fulfillment in your life. It shows you ways around the limitations of rational thought and pushes you outside of your box. The Kabbalistic lens offers a rarely seen perspective by which you can dramatically improve the quality of your life and the world around you. In a world filled with how-to guides, the power of Kabbalah offers you the why-to guide. The Kabbalah Center, Thursday, September 6th at 7 p.m. 8 weeks, $300. Call today. 29 amazing minutes. I got this about 10 years ago, and it just slipped out of a book randomly, and I figured that I'd read it. I never attended the class, but somebody that I know did. And it wasn't anything like the stuff that we talk about on the OCS 101 channel. Not in a negative way or anything like that, but just it was taught from a more commercial approach. They actually sort of trademarked or commercialized the Kabbalah. If you walked in, it would seem as though you were in a strange bookstore / temple type of a atmosphere, a big room with New Age books all over about astrology and tantric sex and some things that were related to Madonna, because at the time she was the big celebrity that was attached to it. And I had to get the red string book because that was the thing I had seen all the celebrities walking around with, just to get an idea of, you know, what were they actually trying to sell people? What was the whole upshot of this? And I'm not knocking them in any way. I really didn't explore it much further. I just walked in, bought the book, and they gave me a Zohar and told me, you know, for good luck or for good, as a good omen, to keep it in the car or someplace to keep me safe. So they were very nice, but you know, it was interesting. And I saw over the years, ever since I got that, every Saturday that I'll drive by, the place gets more and more packed, to where it's on a road that there's not that much parking, auxiliary parking. So people will park their cars across it's about 8 lanes, and they'll walk. And I don't know how they even fit them all in the building. And that's how packed it gets. So whatever you think they're giving something away for free. I really do. Maybe have to go check it out, or maybe join the lodge, because you know, they like to get into their Kabbalah there too. But there's the Q Kabbalah and the K Kabbalah. That's why I wrote in chat. I know who is Q, but I heard so many things. It would be like if somebody said, "Ready, set, go," and you had to run a race, and you didn't know where to start. I had a bunch of things. I just sort of jot down interesting things that I hear throughout the week. And usually I have a bill to bounce them off of, you know, just to throw something out there and, you know, get a little feel for you know, what he might think of it. But I'll do my best. I'll just try to go over some of them. I have an interesting thing about the American civil and criminal justice systems that are grounded on the Mosaic Code. Well, isn't that interesting? In fact, maybe I'll get into this right now, but I'll give you a quick overview of what some of the things I was going to talk about would be, because I didn't know which tags to put in for the show, and my family's sick, so I didn't know how long to make it either. So I'm still kind of working out the technical stuff. But anyway, I put the tags, I think I said politics, I think news and Hollywood esotericism, that sort of stuff. Same, pretty much the same as last week. So I want to try to cover one of each topic. But I thought this thing was real interesting. It was a little bit, it's not long, but, well, maybe I'll start with this. I had some stuff with Alien that no one ever got into in that movie. You know, they never got into what the name of the ship meant or what the names of any of the ships meant. So, you know, maybe I'll hold on to that one. It's kind of interesting. I was listening to some political discourse, and that was going to be the political part. I think it was with E. Michael Jones, and they were asking him about Sky Daddies, is what they like to refer to, you know, people who cling to the old ways, like in To the Old Gods. You know that show, American Gods? That's actually one of the things I wanted to talk about, too. I don't know if we'll have time for that one, but I'll do a show on that. But somebody said to him, I guess it was a political show he was on, and they said, when the girl brought up we should go back to traditional Christian or Catholic values, and she said that a lot of people in the comments said, oh, why do we need sky daddies and all of that? And the reason is they want to keep you locked into the political realm for all of your answers, and they don't want you looking anywhere past that. And then conversely, they like to politicize their religious issues and put them on the agenda. When it came to the Noahide laws, they signed them into law. They had George H.W. Bush, with flanked by I think 10 Chabad Lubavitch rebbes, and he was writing this stuff into law. So, you know, it's the two overlap, and that's why I was going to read this thing here. So that would be a good segue into this, and then I'll explore some of their stuff. Okay, it says America's civil and criminal justice systems are grounded on the Mosaic Code, the law contained in the Torah's books of Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, predates Roman laws and is the first to incorporate humanism and the democratic spirit into a written judicial code. Four centuries before Christ, the Jews devised a legal system based on the dignity of man and individual equality before the law. Individuals accused of crimes were considered innocent until proven guilty, had the right to confront their accusers, were allowed to testify in their own behalf, were not subject to double jeopardy, and could appeal convictions. And that's 400 years before Christ. A thorough and interesting book containing observations on this subject and many more about Jewish history is Max DeMont's, that's with an I, DIMONTS, and I've got a ton of books that I'll give a list for if people are interested in a bibliography. Jews, God, and History. Reproduced here are some of Mr. DeMont's insightful observations on the subject of this blog. The Torah was a bold leap into the future, a giant stride ahead of anything existing at that time. Its concept of equality before the law, a law based on the written code, seems to be a Semitic innovation. Number two, the Mosaic Code, was the first truly judicial written code and eclipsed previously known laws with its all-encompassing humanism, its passion for justice, its love of democracy. These laws were essentially divided into three categories: those dealing with man's relation to man, those dealing with man's relation to the state, and those dealing with man's relation to God. Number four, the Mosaic Code laid down the first principles for a separation of church and state. In the Mosaic Code, the civil authority was independent of the priesthood. The priesthood was charged with the responsibility of keeping the government within the framework of Mosaic law, just as the United States Supreme Court is not above the federal government, but is, nevertheless, charged with the responsibility of keeping it within the framework of the Constitution. Moses also laid the foundation for another separation, which has since become indispensable to any democracy. He created an independent judiciary. Five, there is a curious resemblance between the philosophical outlook of American constitutional law and that of Mosaic law. The federal government has only the powers granted to it by the Constitution. The individual states can do anything not specifically denied to them. That one's important to really understand if you are a constitutional scholar or you're interested in the Constitution, how that works. So this is very interesting. The individual states can do anything not specifically denied to them. In essence, the Mosaic Law also established the principle that the Jews could do anything not specifically denied to them. I wouldn't say the Jews. I would say, if we're talking about Moses, I would say we know who we're talking about when we say the Jews, but I'm saying if you want it to be as historically accurate as possible, it was basically the faith of the Israelites back then. I don't think they were the Jews yet, but you know, this is looking back in hindsight. So the principle that so it kind of presupposes, well, yeah. The principle that the Jews could do anything not specifically denied to them, instead of saying, do such and such a thing, the laws of Moses usually say, don't do this or that. Even where the Mosaic Law makes a positive statement, it is often either an amendment to a negative commandment or else hemmed in by a negative admonition, saying, in effect, when you do this, then don't do that. The Ten Commandments, for instance, list only three do's, but seven don'ts. The three positive commandments are, I am the Lord thy God, observe the Sabbath, and honor your parents. Those are the three things it tells you to do. The seven don'ts leave little doubt as to what one is not supposed to do by fencing in only the negative. Moses left an open field for positive action. This allowed the Jews great flexibility as long as they did not do anything specifically prohibited. They could, like the individual American states, do anything they wanted to do. And this was hosted in South Florida. And it looks like by some personal injury attorney. So like an ambulance chasing type person. I'm just joking, but you know, that's what I think it is. That's what I think posted it. I wonder why. It's a Florida injury attorney thing. And, So play that back if you're interested in the law and how it applies. Believe it or not, the Prophecy Club, if you ever saw that show or saw any of the replays on YouTube, they got into one on there, and it was kind of broad, but it hit a lot of the highlights. I have a bone to pick with the sovereign citizen freemen on the land movements, because they were kind of like the Operation COINTELPRO. There was the white one, the black one. You know, they had one targeted at everyone. And those movements, the Patriot movement, all of them were kind of, they took ideas, and they always do this. They get true believers, they take good ideas, and then, you know, they corrupt them either with people or, you know how it goes. It always ends bad. But does that mean you shouldn't avail yourself of the law? See, I had these arguments with people, not arguments, but I had these conversations with certain people behind the scenes when I was on the radio doing shows back, you know, what must have been 4 or 5 years now. And somebody said, oh, you know, that sovereign citizen stuff is all, it's all BS. It's not true. It doesn't work. Well, I agree. Once you're arguing inside a courtroom, you know, I think your real trial kind of starts out on the, you know, when you initially get pulled over and, you know, you kind of have to decide whether you're going to start contracting and consenting and all that stuff there. Without getting technical, I'm trying to be as vague as possible because people get so pedantic about it. They get into the that's where it goes askew, I think, and that's where I think the true believers that teach it, you know, I know all about the Nisi Prius and the Grandis Caesars and the you know, all the different things you got to learn to. The Black's Law, you got to get the old dictionary, you have to learn some Latin, it's all Latinized, and it's purposely made to, as it progressed, it built off of itself, and I think this is where people get angry, and they talk about the Organic Act, and they talk about that it became a corporation. Look, it was a colony, it was an association, it was always a corporation. When the people first came over to grow tobacco, they had regional governors, and regional governors became more powerful than the king who sent them, and they sometimes wouldn't survive the winters. You know, they had to get everything just right. It was very methodically planned out. You know, that's where I have this bibliography of books. Maybe there's close to 1,000. And there's people like William Best, Lysander Spooner. In fact, let me look real fast here if I can pull some of them up. Otherwise, I'll just skip ahead. But you know, people, a lot of people like Lysander Spooner. If you listen to some that guy, Mark Levin, he'll keep it real basic and he'll talk about Thomas More and Hobbes and Locke. And they're good. They talked about the artificial man and that man, his artificial capacity versus the person and, you know, all that sort of stuff. I can't believe it's not going to pull it up. It took me forever to try to transfer this list of books too. Let me think of some of the names off the top of my head because they are books worth reading. There's a Manual of the Law Applicable to Corporations. There's a book on notes so that you can understand what money actually is by Christopher Stewart. I think it's Joseph's story. I always get Christopher and Joseph confused. And they wrote a book on notes. Then the Manual of the Law Applicable to Corporations will tell you what a corporation quasi-sole is, what a nonprofit and all that sort of stuff, LLCs, those kinds of things. It's hard to really make it very basic. But you could do it like this. You could say there are two laws, God's law and man's law, and that's the whole story. That's the whole story of our human lives and who we are going to choose to follow or how we're going to play, one foot in, one foot out. And how this huge Babylon system got built up around us, and how it's you know, it's damn near impossible to keep track. They don't teach the stuff. I had a thing written on my note that said, things people should know. Well, the three things I always say that they don't teach that people should know, nutrition, the law, and, you know, basic anatomy, biology, and that sort of stuff. If you want to go any further, you know, when it comes to theology and any of these really important things, it's on you, medicine. It's almost like they will get you started. The school system that we have, the Prussian model, is they use a method called banking method. And there were some books on the list. See, that's what threw me off. There were some books on the list that were good examples of, one of them was called Paul Tyner, The Child and State, and basically the role between the child and the state and how they want to get the children young, obviously. And, you know, but some of these things go way into depth. They talk about toys and child psychology and how if a toy is not built properly, that it will reflect upon the child's mindset towards the state and how they can have a negative view over just their toy. So that if they have a crappy plastic toy and it breaks, then they... I'm having some distractions in the background, but I think you get the point. The method that they use in the elite private schools is the trivium and the quadrivium. And to know more about that, you can look into John Taylor Gatto, let me look up actually his bio real fast. I think he's still alive. And he has some great stuff. He said he did more damage than he did good teaching over the years. But, he passed away in 2018, it looks like. Oh, that's too bad. He wrote Weapons of Mass Destruction, The Underground History of American Education, and you can see a lot of his stuff on YouTube. And if I had something I could play for you guys for just a second, I'm going to step out real quick. I'm still here. I'm going to be right back. The lights went off, and I just have one small technical difficulty I have to adjust. So don't go anywhere. I'm still here. Okay. I am back. I don't know if that's good or bad. I watched some of the videos that were on the OCS 101 channel, and there were some good ones that I wanted to sort of sink my teeth into. Maybe I should finish up with the John Taylor Gatto thing. One of his favorite stories, I don't know if it's true, but he was talking about the billionaires and how they tell everybody to go to college, but then they never went. Like Bill Gates and the rebel billionaire, the guy from Virgin Mobile, or what was his name? Let me look it up. What was that guy's name? Branson. I got it before I looked it up. Richard Branson, this story John Taylor Gatto would tell all the time was that his mom dropped him off when he was 4 years old and said they were like 10 miles from his house. And she said, find your way home. And he was like, that was the best education he could have gotten. I will be right back. All right, guys. Trying to do this live, and I have zero help. So, doing the best I can. I started a little bit late. You know, this is just, this is what I mean about the technical difficulties, and trying to get this to work is also trying to get it work to work at a decent hour that works for me and for you guys, and then having good content. And if I can just get some time to put it together, you know, I can do that. I'm actually used to somebody producing, so this is totally, it's really neat. You should see this, the way it's set up from my side and how much control you actually have to adjust everything. It really is a cool setup, and I like it. I like it. It's just, you know, multitasking is not my thing. I like to just kind of have the topic and then go, you know, go on about it. So I saw a trailer for a movie that thinks Tom Hanks, after they made that documentary about Mr. Rogers, now he's going to play Mr. Rogers. And he can't even do the voice. Everybody can do the Mr. Rogers voice. The Mr. Rogers voice is, hello, neighbor. I mean, it's just that everyone has an impression, and he's not even doing a good impression in there. But if that's not kind of creepy, Tom Hanks playing Mr. Rogers right after that whole, and think of him what you will, that whole Isaac Cappy debacle, you got to admit, that's kind of strange. And with all the stuff, all the accusations that he levied against him, I mean, I just don't understand. I don't know what the movie's going to be about. I just happened to catch the trailer, and, you know, I was like, what, you know, what is this? For me, before I knew anything about Tom Hanks or had heard any kind of weird stuff about Tom Hanks, I always liked the movies that he was in, and he reminded me of one of my family members in a kind of fun way, you know, that his had that same sort of personality that was kind of funny and, you know, like a big kid, but at the same time, you know, like a nice guy, or he projected that nice guy persona. And what happened was that I went to see the movie. Did I go see it in a theater, or did I? Because I haven't been to the theater in a long time. I haven't been able to get to the theater in a long time. Did I see it in the theater? It felt like I did. The Captain Phillips movie. And in the movie, he, at the very end, the whole thing was good. It seemed like they were trying to make it as realistic as possible. It was a story about the boat that got hijacked, and they took the captain. And it was the Somali pirates, and South Park did the joke about the Somali pirates. And we all know about what the pirates like to do. So maybe that's why Tom Hanks picked the movie. Maybe it was a secret fantasy of his to be taken personally hijacked by them. And that's not to diminish whatever happened to the real captain. But what happened was that at the end of the movie, what really took me out of the movie was this big ship comes and rescues them, and the Navy SEALs put like a bullet through these guys' heads. It's not worth suffering through. And when he goes up to get checked out, you can tell that all the service personnel are real, and they're not actors. They're at least not good actors. And the woman that's checking him out, he's supposed to be traumatized from this ordeal. You know, they were holding him captive on this little tiny escape shuttle, whatever it was off the side. This is a long time since I've seen it. But I think he got stuck in there, something, and with these guys. And finally, you know, the Navy SEALs moved in on them. They shot them, and he's getting checked out to see if he's okay. And all he has are some, like, you know, minor bruises and things. So they're trying to keep the it's maybe done in like one take, and they're trying to keep the drama in there and keep it as realistic and give it this documentary feel as possible. And when the woman goes to lift up his shirt or tell him to lift up his arms, he goes, "It hurts right here," like a little kid at the pediatrician. And I was like, and it just took me right out of the movie, because he was trying the woman examining was not an actress, and he was either overacting or he was just, you know, he was doing his best to try, and it just failed so miserably that it was cringe. It was very cringe inducing. So that's what I thought of that movie. With spoilers. Yeah, so I don't know how much more cringeworthy the Mr. Rogers thing might be. But I remember that on OCS 101, he had made a thing on Mr. Rogers way before the documentary and way before the movie about how he had the giant dinosaur. And it was either in front of the PBS building or it was in front of the building where they shot the studio. And it was kind of ominous, you know, in a weird kind of a way. It was weirdly ominous. But that was an old video. So I'm going to try to, I don't know if I should cut this one short or if I can, you know what, you guys talk amongst yourselves. If you don't mind the gaps, I'll try to keep it going. And if I can't, then we'll just redo it. But I got technical issues. To no one. So yeah, there was a topic that said, I just wrote, things people should know. But then I didn't write anything underneath it. It was kind of like a fortune cookie I got the other day that said, try again. I'm not joking. This is what the fortune said. It said, no fortune. Reboot. It was trying to be funny, like a computer thing. And it said, like, reboot, restart, and, you know, that sort of thing. And I was like, is that some kind of a meta commentary? How do they know, you know, what if the person that got the fortune didn't even own a computer and didn't get the jargon or the nomenclature? What was the hell was the point of that? I wanted my money back for my fortune cookie. I actually keep each individual one, and I tape them well, one year I made my wife a card out of a bunch of fortune because we ordered so many, and I made I took the cardboard box from where the food came in. I folded it, I wrote on it, and then I took all the best fortunes, because some of them are actually kind of thought provoking, and I taped them down in a row and made two rows. And I made that into the card. And I said, remember all the great meals? And I can't remember exactly. But I thought it was creative. And, you know, it probably got thrown out. But, you know, if I had gotten that one, I would have just, you know, I would have been kind of pissed. Or if I got a couple of those. So, because I've gotten a few of the same fortunes before, believe it or not. So, yeah, I was talking about the Trivium. I did a whole show on that. That was, believe it or not, the most successful show that I ever did when I was doing radio. And we talked about the Trivium, the Quadrivium. And basically what they are is the method of, it's more of a way to think critically. So you do who, what, when, where, why, how. So if you were asking somebody a story, it's kind of like what they teach reporters. If you don't have all those things, if someone got in a car accident and you just said, you know, this car accident occurred, and you didn't say, or you said 3 a.m., but you didn't know where, if you were missing just a couple of those key things, it's part of rhetoric, then, you know, you wouldn't have the story. You would have an incomplete story. Conversely, if you do have those things, you can pretty much figure out by deductive, there's inductive and deductive reasoning. you can kind of find out, and that's what the Sherlock Holmes books are about. And that guy was into Freemasonry big time. In fact, go watch the last one, Game of Shadows with Moriarty. And the one before that, I forget what the name of it was, but Young Sherlock Holmes, that's got the pyramids in it and stuff too. I think that was a Spielberg project. I can't remember. I saw that when I was a youngster. But it was pretty good. It was the first movie to use CGI. Yeah. And what happened was that they were trying to show you how he could deduce and get to the bottom of things using this method. Now, do they teach anything like that in the public school? Do they teach critical thinking? See, there was a fake test that was going around. I don't know if it was real or fake, but there was a test that was supposedly from a coal mining town or a town somewhere, maybe in Pennsylvania. And it said, what epoch of history are we living in? It used verbiage that we don't use today. It asked, if you had a bushel of wheat at such and such a price, you know, how much would you need if it weighed this much and then this season, and then how much would a check would you, you know, it was all practical, common sense, putting the math together, going from step to step, but not in a vacuum. Like if you were doing math or learning these subjects, that they very purposely break up into. Like I was trying to, when I was studying nutrition, if I'm just reading a medical journal or a paper that was published, I'm looking at this study and it's hard to grasp some of the topics, as opposed to if someone says, I'm going to do a cycle of steroids, or I'm not going to do a cycle of steroids, or a cycle of these new things called SARMs. I want to get my body in such and such a shape. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to cycle on this week and this. And they start explaining what their goals are. Then it's not a vacuum. There's a context for what the different terms. You have a person. You have an actual model. And that's how we learn. We learn through stories. So a lot of times, you know, when kids are introduced to a lot of these subjects, first of all, they're overly tired, they're underfed, or they're nutritionally deprived. What happens is that, you know, they should be sleeping, you know, especially the teenagers. That's why they're so tired, because that's when you grow, is when you sleep. And what happens is that they're just not interested. I remember not being interested. Stuff that when I went back to school, if I had gone back to school at my age now, or just maybe a few years later, would have been fascinated by some of the things that the kids were studying, because there was a context for it. Now that I was older, you know, I understood what it had to do with. The only thing that was interesting was creative writing. They can't really mess that up. Because, you know, no matter what you do, that is something you have to kind of bring forth. So that was a class that they can't really mess up. Math, they literally would just, and this was all the way up to the college level, they would just put problems on the board. And they've politicized everything, even the math. They flipped the sciences so that the social sciences are on the top, the hard sciences are on the bottom. That was by design. That was for social engineering purposes. That was so that they could basically enshrine the social workers and the psychologists and have them be the new priesthood, because the doctor class is the priesthood. That's why they practice under the caduceus. And they wear the white coats, and they are the arbiters of, you know, what is and what is not. And, you know, you used to see just back maybe 10 years ago, they're still having some of the debates. And I think I covered a little bit of this last week about the atheists versus the Christians, you know, arguing, and why they would even have the debates in the first place. And they had the four horsemen, and then one of them died, Hitchens. I don't know if the other ones are still alive. But the reason that they were doing that was because it fits their paradigm of a rationalist, materialistic viewpoint. They want people to think that this is all that there is, and they want to push. You can't push eugenics. You can't push population control. And I don't mean it to, or dysgenics. I don't mean it to sound as sinister as it is. Some of it isn't so sinister, but the way they want to do it overall, the only way you can get people to follow it would be to have a bunch of 14-year-old atheists running around on YouTube arguing with, you know, believers and having them think that they, you know, it caters to their ego in a big way. And the problem with it too is, among many problems, is that there's no humility there. The one good thing about, I guess religion as a whole, is that you're not the top person, you know, so just by virtue of the fact that you're not at the top of the pyramid, it has to humble you. There's a higher power, a higher source, a creator, you know, whatever you want to say. And if you take that away, then something has to fill that vacuum. And that's the whole reason why they would do all those things. Now, interestingly enough, it was always, for some reason, the Christians that wanted to go and argue about the seven-day creation story in Genesis. Why were they the ones that decided to go take up that mantle and argue? Why did they decide that they had to go and defend the faith? Why didn't anyone else? Why didn't just an intellectual? Maybe they were someone like, I'm trying to think of his name, Ehrman. You know, there's plenty of people that study the Bible, you know, that just, that's, that they study it, and maybe they don't necessarily believe it. In fact, whether you believe it or not, you could get into a debate and take a side in that debate. But I think the problem with a lot of them was that one side was arguing philosophy, and the other side was arguing a system of measurement, because that's what science is. It's taking a, you know, a hypothesis, and then you're measuring the hypothesis. You're taking, it's like debating a ruler. So it was flawed from the start. And, you know, you can see some of these old debates on YouTube with William Lane Craig and some of these other guys, and I have my own personal issues with all of them. Not that they're bad people or anything like that, but just, you know, where we depart on some of our views and beliefs and stuff. So that's the religion aspect in the tag of why I put religion. With the esoteric stuff, Bill was talking about the movie The Nines. And he did one on Nirvana and Hanson, the band. So I'll just give you guys a little bit of what I thought about those. That movie, The Nines, Melissa McCarthy is Jenny McCarthy's cousin. And she is a comedic actress now who's very popular. She came off a show called Gilmore Girls. I never saw the show. I just know that they made some kind of a joke thing, reference to it on something that she did. And that was a very strange movie for either one of them to go and be in. That movie is really esoteric. It's very challenging if you were just a regular audience member to go sit down and see. And it doesn't make even that much sense if you do look into esotericism, this sort of stuff. It's kind of challenging, even, you know, on the level of, you know, looking a few layers below the surface. So for them to make that movie, to me, who greenlit that, you know? And at what point in both of their careers, her coming off a successful show and him, I'm sure, coming off of a successful movies. I think he was doing comedies, and he did all of everything. He was Van Wilder, and so he's very quick-witted. That didn't fit into his repertoire at that time. Why? I'd like to know, if I could ask both of them, why they were interested in it. What attracted them to the project? You know, all these sort of behind-the-scenes sort of questions, because that movie was really esoteric and weird. And for the two of them to decide to make that movie at that time, I don't know if I admire them or if they did it out of, they had to have known. They had to have been interested in it, because it didn't make sense logically as a career move for either one of them. The movies that she's made since then have been kind of ad-libbed comedies, where she just kind of plays like a Chris Farley, a female Chris Farley. And then she was in Ghostbusters, and everybody hated that movie, the female Ghostbuster movie, that was pretty awful. And I could actually get into the details and reasons of why that movie was bad compared to the other one. First of all, just quickly, the story was not good. They were pushing an agenda. But the other parts, just if you want to look at the differences from the movies, comparing the two movies, if you go back and you watch the original, they really utilized the city. You know, they utilized the library. They utilized the college campus. They make you feel like you're walking down the street in New York City. They don't make you feel like you're just outside of some set piece, some building set piece somewhere. They actually make you feel like you're driving through the city. When they go to the hotel, when they have their headquarters, when they get the car, the extras don't look like extras. They look like actual, you know, people in the streets of New York. And as a funny aside, when my aunt and uncle were living and uncle was working in New York, he had an office that overlooked that Central Park. And there's a street there that's wide for the streets in New York. So they like to film a lot of scenes there for when they need walking conversation, you know, like to take place in New York. It's a popular street that they will cordon off and use. And they did back, this was in the 80s. And he used to tell me before movies came out that he had seen Michael Douglas getting chased down the street by it's funny because he said he was getting chased down the street by a monster truck. And then the movie, the War of the Roses came out. But that was in the suburbs when he gets chased by that. That was kind of a precursor to Mr. and Mrs. Smith, was Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie with the cars and them trying to kill each other. But they told me that before Ghostbusters 2 came out, before they even knew, people even knew it was going to be made, my aunt said, they're going to make the Statue of Liberty walk down the street in this new Ghostbusters movie, the second one that's going to come out. And I said, really? And I just filed it away. And then it came out, and sure enough, that was the climax of the movie. So yeah, they knew about it because they saw it. So that was kind of cool. And then, some of the differences between the two movies were they had such a great cast in the first one that ad-libbed some of the lines. The characters were very well drawn out. All of them have quotable, good dialogue. The sponge migration part when they're walking into the library, when he asked the woman, Alice, are you menstruating? And when he says, this reminds me of the time, Egon, when you tried to drill a hole through your head. And he says, that would have worked if you hadn't stopped me. Well, what was funny about that was people do actually drill holes to their head. There's a whole thing to that. And I'll get into that next time. I'm gonna find out all about it. Drilling holes in your head. So that's something that they just didn't pull out of the sky. There was a lot of H.P. Lovecraft stuff with the Gozer, and there was a lot of there's even a line where he says, they're in the jail, and he says, the Venkman, Bill Murray character, he says, let's just pretend for a second that I don't know anything about metallurgy or ancient architecture or all this sort of stuff, and just tell me what the hell is going on. And he looks at him, Dan Aykroyd, and he says, "You never studied." And what's funny about it is that the stuff that he was talking about the building, you could look at it and see predictive programming for 9/11, that there was some sort of metaphysical significance to the building and that something was going to happen to it, that it basically gets hit by this catastrophic, you know, unseen attack. And the other thing was that it was, he said, so they don't build them like they used to. That's what he says to the Ray character. And then the guy says, no, he says, they never built them like this. He said, this entire building is basically an antenna for paranormal activity, for energy to be channeled down. And that there was a secret society that was trying to bring in the end of the world after the World War, that decided society was too cyclical. Now, where have we heard that concept before? And he said, let me guess, Gozer worshippers. And the guy liked to do a lot of unnecessary surgeries. And that was the guy that was the head of the society. It sounds like Hellboy. It sounds like, you know, everything. It sounds like the League of Shadows in the Dark Knight trilogy. All of them are a secret society that decided that the rest of society was no good. So then you have the same symbolism with the two double dogs, like the food, like the snack. And they stand on the two pillars. And he says it's Sumerian, Babylonian. And he says that, and then the character of Gozer comes out, and it's exactly the same as when Lady Gaga comes out of the water with the two dogs in the video. I think it's not Bad Romance. It's the one that came out on that time that was popular. She did the same sort of iconography, that same milieu, and copied it. Just like at one time, they were all copying Metropolis. Everybody from Madonna to Kylie Minogue, they were even using the same costumes and I think the same sets they were sharing them. And it was Madonna's brother. And this is worth listening to on Howard Stern. Her gay brother, openly gay brother, went on Howard Stern. He had a falling out with her. And he was credited for designing the sets on the last tour before she booted him. And he does a really good interview, you know, telling some, you know, inside stuff. And people have confirmed from her crew and, you know, people that worked with her that, yes, she puts all that stuff in there. It's very purposeful. I mean, she goes out of her way to put the stuff in there, but they actually confirmed it. So I think that's pretty interesting. And, oh, yeah, the video with Bill did the bell video on OCS 101, if you guys are just finding this show, he did a video with the where they tore down the Temple of Bel and they created the world's first bathroom or whatever the article said. Now, he had covered that a long time before that, so I thought that was pretty interesting. And and he also, I don't know how to do the calls, but let me see if I can unmute. Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
Hello?
How you doing?
Do you hear me?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yeah. I just want to introduce myself. My name is Mike Tonin. I've been on, I've been in contact with Bill for probably over a decade now. I'm
hey,
on
Mike.
His website. I comment sometimes. I don't know. I don't know where to begin. I wanted to make this a quick phone call. I'm actually at work. I got to get back to it, but I usually listen to your shows after I get off work when they're you know, recorded.
Uh-huh.
But yeah. So anyway, yeah. I just wanted to introduce myself real quick.
Nice to meet
you. Do you comment at all on Bill's website?
You know what? I try to. If I do, it's QWERTY, QWERTY, just the letters on the keyboard. So that's my
okay.
username. So I'll drop a
all
comment
right.
and so you can see. But yeah, right. I figure I do the commentary here, but was there something specifically that specific topic that you had?
I wouldn't know where to begin. I mean, I've kind of been in similar situations as Bill. I didn't have the tough upbringing that Bill had, but I've had like supernatural stuff happen to me throughout my life. And I think that's why, like, I'm drawn to this stuff. And I know that
right.
There's like something bigger going on. You know what I mean? And I listen to you guys talk and like, I don't know personally that everything you say is true. I'm not saying it's not. I can't speak for you guys. You know what I mean? And what you've been through.
Right.
So it's kind of like I'm hearing what you're saying and like, you know, it's kind of ballpark where I'm coming from, you know?
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, I'm glad that's kind of the point of what we were trying to do when we talked. It sort of provides a place where people can go to, because where else can you go to really talk about this stuff? And YouTube sort of made it where, I mean, it's almost impossible to, or if you want to go really deep, you know, I always say I cover the superficial part, and then, you know, he goes deeper and he pulls the words apart and that sort of stuff.
Every time I try to go deep with people, most people, I get attacked like just maliciously by people, and like I don't get it. Like, why don't just get out of here, get off my videos, don't bother me. If you want to be a reasonable human being and talk to me, you know, because I know where Bill and other people are coming from, and it's like I had some videos up years ago. And uh-huh. I got fed up with it. Like, if that's
me too.
Most people are this blind and ridiculous, and they're going to be just flat out malicious and crazy, you know, forget it. But one thing I will say, I was in the diner the other day and I started hearing somebody talk about, you know, just how screwed up stuff in the media and the politics and all that is. And I gave him the website. I wrote it down on a piece of paper. I said, take a look at this website. You know, I didn't want to come off like a cult, like somebody in a cult or anything, you know what I mean? But I just figured he sounded like he knew like things were messed up, and it was like on a psychological level, they're playing with people, you know what I mean? So, hello? Hello? Hello?
Okay, am I back?
Hello?
Am I back?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, you're back. Yeah, you were off for a little while.
Okay, we got so that's why we had 90 seconds and it wouldn't let me. I was trying to just mute it so you could talk. All right, well, I guess just keep listening and we'll keep the content coming, and I'll drop some comments in, and at least I'll be one other person that, you know, you can connect with. And if you want to give your YouTube channel, you can. If not, it's 90 seconds.
Yeah, I'm really kind of off YouTube. I'm off Facebook. I'm trying to get away from all that. But yeah, every now and then I do come across somebody who kind of sees something's not right though, you know? So I try to pass either the website along or just try to talk with them, you know?
Right. I hear that. That's good. Thanks for calling in. And I don't know if we're going to get cut off probably in like 10 seconds. So I'm going to close it out.
If you want, you got you got my number? Or?
Yeah, I see the number.
All right. If you want to give me a call sometime or text or whatever.
I'll do that. Okay. All right. I'm going to say goodbye and end the episode. And, okay. I see, because this is the second time me doing this. So I just want to, okay. I think it cut that audio off. All right, well, I'll be in touch with everybody. And, okay, thanks. Thanks, guys. See you guys next week. Okay, I don't know if it ended or not. What I'll do is, I think last week it went over by 15 minutes. But it might be better if I just end it right here. I'm still learning how this works. So let's cap it right there. Okay. All right. Talk to you guys next week or maybe before that. Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.